And the second part, of course, mainly from people from Hawking's group, believe that information is really lost and we should modify our quantum mechanical rules, introducing some additional notions, replacing this matrix by something more complicated. A few years ago, Maldacena made the interesting proposal that actually unitarity in black hole can be restored if we take into account all possible topologically different gravitational instances. And apparently that statement influenced Hawking, and he now suggesting that information is not lost in black hole. But since there is no actual paper, it's quite difficult to say what are the details of his claim. But hopefully it will come sooner or later. It's very, well, it's quite convenient to think about unitarity and analyze unitarity in terms of relaxation. So basically, in order to see whether given system is unitary or not, you have to kick it and see how it relaxes back to thermal equilibrium. So if system is unitary and it lives in finite volume, then after small perturbation, it will show us certain quasi-periodic relaxation. So the behavior of the relaxation, how system relaxes back to thermal equilibrium, there is a well-defined theory how to analyze it. It's so called, it is called linear response theory. So in order to do that, you have to apply, so suppose you you apply certain perturbation in certain quantum operator, and then you have to look at correlation function of operator at perturbation operator at time t and its correlation with same operator at moment t equals zero when it was first applied. So this correlation function carries information about relaxation. And if system is unitary and it lives in finite volume, then this correlation function can be decomposed in sort of Fourier expansion with discrete frequencies omega set by size of all this box. Of course, interaction, if system is interacting, all these frequencies will be dependent on how system interacts, and it's usually, it's typically not just equidistant step. But in general, a system should show quasi-periodic behavior, and information is not lost in that case. It's quite opposite if you have a system in infinite volume. Then same correlation function would not be quasi-periodic, instead it would show us some exponential decay. And the characteristic decay time depends on temperature of the system. That simply happens because if you set a perturbation in the system, it will go to infinity and just disappears then. And spectrum is, of course, continuous. So it's interesting to see what happens, how transition from that behavior to that behavior actually happens. Suppose we have a different lengths which characterize this system, L1, L2, L3, and so on. Keep some of them fixed and one length L1, let's take it to infinity. So basically it means that L1 should be much, much larger than L2 and L3. Then if you look at correlation function, this correlation function, then in the beginning it will show us some oscillations. Then it will show exponential decay. So pressure function will be exponentially decaying. And the cyclic decays practically to nothing. But when time goes on and gets close to L1, system starts to recall information about initial perturbation, and well, initial profile of this perturbation will be repeated, and the whole long time oscillation function is actually quasi-periodic. But we would not notice this if you look at system in at this interval of time. You would say that it lives in infinite volume and correlation function is actually decaying. That's a quite general behavior which will be important. What about black hole? In my talk, I will consider asymptotically AGS black hole, more specifically three-dimensional so-called BTZ black hole. And it's a nice example of black hole just because it lives in finite volume. So asymptotically AGS space behaves like boundary for the system. And also, such a black hole can exist infinite amount of time built in equilibrium with quantum radiation. So it is example of so-called eternal black hole. Again, if you make a perturbation somewhere outside black hole horizon and look how correlation function of this perturbation behaves as function of time, you would see that now it exponentially decays. And in fact, we can also decompose it in certain frequencies, but these frequencies are now complex, and well, imaginary part of the frequency is negative typically. These are so-called quasi-normal models. And it's quite clear why it happens. Why we have continuous spectrum, exponential decay as a normal mode. That's because if you look at this space-time very close to black hole horizon, perturbations typically propagate in near black hole horizon, not in real metric, but in so-called optical metric. If you measure length to horizon in optical metric, you'll find that it's actually diverging. That just means that propagation effectively, well, perturbation effectively propagates in near horizon in infinite volume. And the fact that we have exponential decay and quasi-normal modes is a clear manifestation of loss of information. But returning again to unitary theory, by quite general argument, we are expected to have so-called recurrence type or Poincaré recurrence type. So for classical system, that's a well-known statement, which is, you have to do it slowly, right? Just a combination of two facts. First, that Hamiltonian system, system described by Hamiltonian mechanics, actually shows the evolution which preserves volume in phase space. And if we, the total volume for phase space is finite, we can put, for example, our system considered at finite energy in a box, then phase space would be finite. Then, considering two different regions, well, it's possible to show that we will always intersect. And that means that if we start at certain point in phase space and look at evolution of the system, sooner or later we come close to the initial point, arbitrarily close. In quantum case, for quantum system, the fact that phase space is preserved, golden phase space is preserved, means that the evolution is unitary. The fact that phase space is compact is related to discreteness of the spectrum. Now, it's quite interesting that in this case, we have hierarchy of different time scales. So, we have a discrete spectrum, right? The system is unitary in finite volume, and we have a discrete spectrum, which can be quite irregular, because we expect that in the system there is interaction. But we can introduce some average in spacing between the energy levels. So, we take two neighbors in the spectrum and average this difference in over the spectrum. We get something, some delta omega, and in regards to delta omega is some time scale which is called high-symmetric time scale. And this time scale reflects actually discreteness of the spectrum. So if you look at the system for time much less than Heisenberg time, you would actually not notice that this spectrum is discrete. You would say that it's continuous, and the system would look dissipated for that time scale. But when time becomes close to Heisenberg time, discreteness of the spectrum becomes transparent, and system shows certain correlations, certain periodicity and correlation function. But that's not all. There is another time scale in the system called Pantelli-Curran's time, which grows as exponential of entropy in the system. And only at that time scale, the complete restoration of formation, let's say, happens. You would see that there are large scale periodicities in the system. So again, if you look at this behavior or the behavior of correlation function, you would notice that you would say that information is lost here. But if time goes on and approaches Heisenberg time and Poincaré time, you would say that this information is not lost, and what we actually have is unitary theory, which shows us some quasi-periodic behavior. So returning to black hole, semi-classical black hole, no recurrences and information is apparently lost. Is it possible to fix it? If you want to solve this problem, we have to find a way how to assign discrete spectrum of real frequencies to the black hole. This spectrum should be quite non-trivial, or should be non-trivial enough in order to reproduce this complex time evolution. It should show us hierarchy of different time scales. So my example would be, I will analyze this problem from the point of view of ADS CFT correspondence, and more specifically, correspondence between two-dimensional conformal field theory and gravity on a three-dimensional syntotically anti-de Sitter space-time. So my system would be two-dimensional, one plus one dimension. I wanted to live on compact, on a circle of size A, so that be my finite size system at finite temperature. So if a weak rotate real time to Euclidean time, I have to close the period beta, and I end up with some two-dimensional torus with two periods beta and A. And that's the space which is supposed to be on the boundary of syntotically anti-Sitter space. And it should be, well, in 2 plus 1 dimensions, we don't have many possibilities. It's just space-time should be locally anti-de-Sitter. But globally, it might be different, and we can do it by considering different portions of hyperbolic space. There are two obvious spaces which satisfy this kind of condition. First one is BTZ black hole, and another is Chiron AGS. They are dual to each other in the sense that if you interchange Euclidean time angle phi, beta and A, you would get from one space time and another space time, and vice versa. Well, in terms of, we can introduce modular parameter tau, which is just a ratio to periods on the torus, and then when it is modular transformation into modular parameters. So according to IDS-FT correspondence, on the bulk we have gravity which with negative cosmological constant lambda, a little a is size of anti-de Sitter, radius of anti-de Sitter. And on the boundary we have, we're supposed to have some large NCFT with central charge 3 over 2 a over g. G is Newton constant. And we can introduce parameter k, which is c over 6. And that parameter plays the role of large n parameter in CFT. Well, it's also known that it is so-called D1, D5 system. I'm not a big expert in D1, D5 system, but apparently it can be interpreted as a gas of strings which wind of simply wound or multiple wound strings around circle. So k is winding number of such strings. So now if we turn on a field, some field phi with mass m and spin s in the bulk, according to this correspondence, it means that we turn on a certain conformal operator on the boundary. Conformal weights of this operator uniquely determined by m and s mass and spin of the boundary. So that's the description, and there is a description how to compute correlation functions from the bulk side. And now we take, we compute this correlation function using ADS-FT prescription and take into account only these two space types, namely BTZ black hole and ADS. Well, we take a contribution of each space time with certain weight, and this weight is E to minus S. S is Euclidean action. Correlation functions, fortunately, this and that for BTZ and for ADS, people calculated before us, Chekhov and Keskevokuri did it quite long ago. And we just take these correlation functions and use it for other purposes. So BTZ correlation function is this one, and it shows clear exponential decay. Correlation function comes from, which comes from BTZ, exponentially decay. And the one which comes from thermal ADS, there is usual sign here, and that's just oscillating function. It shows periodicity. Combination of two is, of course, not quite periodic function.
What is this, the correlation function for? What kind of field?
Well, this data here is supposed to be to any massive field.
This is a quantum field living in the background.
On the bulk, we have
in the bulk
we have scalar field, for example, of mass m. That would be an example of that expression. Of course, a different temperature, different contributions, different contributions that dominate. For large temperature BTZ contribution dominates, for small temperature DS dominates, thermal DS dominates, and transition happens at certain temperature T, and that's exactly Hawking phase transition. And that transition is sharp when K is infinite. Otherwise, we just have a crossover. But that's sort of puzzling, isn't it, that a DSC phi correspondence description of that correspondence give us a correction function which is exponentially decaying. Although the theory which is supposed to live on the boundary should be unitary. I'll come back to that issue a little bit later, but let me discuss something else. First, we know that actually not just these two spacetimes satisfy this boundary condition in the bulk. With the whole SL2Z family of spacetimes, parameterized by some integer numbers A and B, C and D, and they should satisfy this condition. So we should, well, and this space, this family of spacetimes is actually exactly that topologically valued gravitational instantons, which we are supposed to take into account. So can we sum over all this SL2Z family for correlation function? And can the result of this summation be still quasi-periodic? That's the interesting question. Well, speaking about this SL2Z family, one can show that it can be parameterized by C and D, which are relatively prime integers. C equals zero is thermal DS, and C non equals zero is a black hole. So we have a bunch of black holes in this family.
I'm confused.
Sorry. Yes.
The boundary is Euclideanized or not?
Yes. Well,
I don't know. How can you study real time correlation?
Yes. I could calculate a correlation function from ADS, from ADS for torus. So my boundary of ADS is two-dimensional torus. Then I do weak rotation gain to real time. And that would give me actually a correlation function in real time, which is actually a final correlation function. So that's the prescription. Simply it's easier to do it that way.
Is that correlation function the one you want? I mean, if you were, I'm wondering whether that's the one you want or whether it's really in a thermal bath or something.
Yes.
If it's a genuine thermal bath, that would dab out your recurrences even in a unitary system. You see what I mean?
Correlation function, which I need a thermal correlation function, which are calculated with E minus beta H.
Right.
And this correlation function.
There's a subtle difference. I mean, I'm not sure which is right, but there's a difference between a system that you start off in a thermal state, and then you let it evolve as a closed system unitarily, and a system that remains in contact with some kind of heat path and evolves as an open system. The first one would show your recurrences, the second one would not. So. Are you saying that really what this calculation does is the first one?
Well, I didn't get what was first, what was second.
Okay. The first one is a closed system that starts in a thermal state.
Yes.
But then it goes out of a thermal state.
Yes.
Because of the perturbation.
Yes.
The second one was that it remains somehow in contact with the thermal reservoir so that it's an open system and it evolves in a, I guess maybe you're doing the first one.
I guess I'm doing the first one.
Yeah.
So now I want to take some of the SL2Z family. family, and that's exactly what I'm calculating here. This correlation function is Euclidean correlation function on two-dimensional torus. Well, I use some coordinate, complex coordinates. Tau is a modular parameter for this given torus, and there is sum over n in order to make it doubly periodic, and I also sum over C and D, which is sum over the Sarkozy framework. There is a subtle point here, what I should take for the wave, because each such contributions should be taken with appropriate weight, and this weight might be a non-trivial machine. And there are reasons to think that it should be non-trivial, but let's take just a simple one, simple choice, e to minus s, where s is your Euclidean fetch. Now, let's get your Euclidean correlation function. I do weak rotation to real time, and I get something which is quite difficult to analyze. I don't know anybody who analyzed this correlation function for real time, but we can choose do something, do some approximations.
So, check out this.
That's right. That's the only one.
Okay.
But. Yes, I think he did it in Euclidean case. But he, for the weight, he took just one. So all different geometries are weighed from with factor one. It's quite not usual from the real physics. But he did look at this problem, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also there was a work by Massimo Baratti.
Right.
So let's
actually formula from the paper. They suggest to look at this expression. They said it's difficult. Let's look at a large T limit of this expression. And that's what they get. So this factor comes from the action. This comes from this part. And this part comes from the correlation function. It's T dependent. And now they see that, well, we see that for certain time, this exponential factor kills this exponential factor. And starting with certain time, all terms in this sum become important, equally important. We cannot just neglect some of them. But let's, according to this people, that property is actually indicating that semi-classical approximation is breaking down. But what I should notice, well, I should say here, that we can actually analyze the whole sum here. So what's happening? We have sum over different terms, and each term is exponentially decaying. But if you look at characteristic time, decay time, this, we see that with C or D going to infinity, this characteristic time becomes infinite. It means that the whole sum is actually decaying as function of time much slower than exponential function. Well, we can look at this simple example, simple sum. And if we, this sum can be, it's very similar to that one, but we can evaluate this sum by approximating the sum by integral, and we'll see that it's actually decaying as 1 over t, it has power. Exactly the same trick works in this case, and you'll get that this correlation function after summing over the Sarkozy family decays by power law. That's better than exponential decay, but still it's not quite periodic.
Just one question to your weights. So is e to the minus s, isn't that an appropriate way for the canonical ensemble approach instead of the microcanonical ensemble approach, and therefore we're actually in the second case?
Well, I'm not sure you can fix it from this argument, but in principle, quantum gravity on the EDS space should give us a description for that way. But it's not quite clear. There is actually one population I know. It's so-called fairy tale paper. Did some years ago, and where they compute elliptic genus on the CFT side, I think, yes. And then they reinterpret it from the point of view of the bulk, and it looks like it is sum over the C2Z family in certain ways. And that way it would never guess. So if the CFT works both ways, then it should be a prescription for the weight of anti-de-Sitter. And they're quite complicated.
Even though you're working in like an ensemble approach, it's e to the minus s as a weight, which comes out of that analysis?
No, I don't think it's related to microcanonical ensemble.
Just
so when you construct this sum of over SL, SL to Z images of black hole, well, you sum over BTZ black hole, but I thought that from this paper that we just mentioned that not all terms could have an interpretation as a SL to Z image of the black hole. And there were some contributions that were something like a BTZ black hole or its SL to Z image. Plus, present some additional,
You may include particles.
Yeah, something
you
like that.
You may include particles. Yeah. They consider also particles. They did left way, plus they included particles. And it doesn't help.
Right, but don't you expect, I guess my question is, what would you expect when you compute a correlation function and you ask for its body parameters? Do you think you should sum over only the images of the visible or also this? What might have
interpretation
of quantum radiation?
Well, I would expect that we should take PTZ and sum over all images of PTZ.
Just that.
Yeah. What else?
Well, I'm saying
I think we cover all family with this. By doing that, I think we cover all family. Well, in fact, there are different settle points here. For example, sum over C and D is actually divergent. That's trick. And we have to make some regularizations. There's no general prescription for that. And I mean, it also can influence the final result.
Can you
remind
us what C and D stand for?
These are just central, excuse me, relatively prime integers which parameterize the spanning
again. There's another general issue, I don't know, maybe it's worth raising, but I mean, how do you know that the right thing is to sum over all the instances?
What else?
Well, only certain ones, because you're doing something like a saddle point approximation to some integral, and
exactly.
Not all saddle points in general contribute.
Well, that's what we are instructed to do. But you might say that actually because, I mean, semi-classical approximations seems to break down, we should probably take into account loop corrections. For example, that shouldn't be classical gravitational action S, but it should be plus classical plus certain corrections, which in principle no.
I mean, that's true also, but I think the other point is something that people don't often refer to. If you're just doing ordinary complex integral in one dimension, I mean, just like you would do in a mathematical physics course, then there are rules for which saddle points actually contribute, and it depends on deforming the contour. And there are various conditions. In general, not all saddle points contribute. Here you're making a very strong assumption that you can Euclideanize everything just to a purely Euclidean.
Yes.
Contour, and that all saddle points do contribute in that.
Well, yes, I agree. We do it in a naive way. And I do you know anybody doing this correctly for shopping?
They take the risks on their phone. They don't really. Right, they don't. I mean, but you don't really go in the off the complex plane. Or
the case
you go a big in and then you take just the risks on their phone.
Yes. So,
this one should continue. I mean, maybe they are not considering some that should, but you don't really go off the complex plane.
No, they are. The real metric is often the complex plane,
and
the
property
of the
Lorentzian metric. Yeah, but in the Cartesian case, the Cartesian case, the
self-consistent. If gravity, you can't do this,
then you should discuss that.
Okay, let me continue.
You could draw a complex.
That's an interesting discussion, actually. Okay. But let me return to this question, why adhesive T seems to produce a decaying result? Because if boundary CFT is unitary, it should give us something which is quasi-periodic. And we have puzzled by that question for some time, and we suggested, well, in that joint paper I mentioned before, we suggested that the Polner resolution, we suggested that additionally to these two parameters, beta and a, in this particular CFT, which is dual to ADS3, this additional scale in the game. It grows the central charge proportional to k, and in the limit of infinite k, it's not actually visible. System would think that it's just infinite. But at finite k, no problem. System would show quite periodic behavior with this new time scale. And that suggestion, if it is correct, it makes certain suggestion for resolution of unitarity problem. It suggests that for that we have to look at the problem at finite k. But that doesn't seem where we have well-defined correspondence. And the real question is what should be the gravity counterpart of this duality at finite k. In particular, should it be black hole, should it have horizon? Apparently, according to this argument, whatever it is, it should not have any horizon, because if it has horizon, it would necessarily show us exponential decay. And what I'm going to show you is some suggestion about what it might be. But let me first speak about something else.
Sorry, when you say it's boundary CFT, do you exactly know which one you're talking about?
Yes, it's quite known.
So which one?
It's the D1-D5 system.
Is what?
D1-D5 system, whatever it means. Don't ask me what it means.
It's an international large register of a certain set of fundamentals.
So people can look at the unitarity target there?
Well, there is a unitary. Yeah, I mean, it's unitary.
It's unitary, it should be unitary.
So it's unitary by definition.
Well, I mean, because, in some cases, we're able to non contact. Okay, so this system is okay.
It's rational.
Is it rational or?
No, it's a contact conformal theory. Okay, it should be.
So for non rational conformal theory, like ADS3 or UV, or, you know, in some cases, if you do the nice stuff, you know that. You get, and you know, the life cycle is you get what you do usually, it's more the case of string theory. In my string theory, you know that you have to have these non string states or have more stuff, but here it's.
But that one is compact, you don't expect any tricks.
Yeah, the boundary control field here is compact.
Okay. So another problem, of course, nobody, as far as I know, calculated the two point functions.
From there?
From the CFT side, because it's strongly coupled. Yeah. So let me mention another model which it is quite useful in this context. It's called brick wall model, suggested by Hoff quite a while ago. And well, he was thinking about quite different from this issue problem, how to calculate. His idea was to calculate entropy of black hole as entropy of thermal gas just outside the black hole horizon. And you can do that but you will see the spectrum of this perturbation, so that horizon continuous, and you would get infinite result. So he suggested regularization for brick wall, so we just put a boundary staying at distance epsilon from horizon, and we both say Dirichlet condition. Once we do it, obvious what happens, system now is describing discrete spectrum, and obviously complex polynomial modes are now gone, so we don't have any funny things. Entropy, well, what can happen? Entropy. So a lot of things can be solved in that way, but this space-time is not regular. It's not smooth. We just put less some artificial boundary. But it might be that it is a crude way to actually model still unknown non-perturbative quantum physics. And I will show you a smooth way to do similar things. But I repeat that it is a model, it was invented to show certain behavior, which I will tell you later. But this metric which I show you doesn't satisfy any equations I know. So if we remove lambda from the metric, lambda is equal to zero, that would be classical physics black hole. It has horizon at y equals zero. Now there is deformation parameter lambda is supposed to be function of this k, parameter k, such that when lambda when k goes to infinity, lambda goes to zero, and we have classical black hole. Otherwise, lambda is there, although it might be very, very, well, actually tiny. Well, let's now look at this metric and compare to classical BTZ. In Euclidean case, when we compactify Euclidean time, classical BTZ look like, well, there are two asymptotic regions. And if you compactify, it looks like cigar. There are two cigars jet each other at some point, at one point which is horizon. And these two regions are disconnected. But now for non-zero lambda, there is a very narrow throat with size lambda which connect these two regions. Well, if you compute curvature for that metric, it is asymptotically NDS, so curvature is nice at infinity, but it is very large at the throat. It scales like 1 over lambda squared. Also, Lorentzian geometry is quite different. BTZ case is like that. There are two asymptotic regions, well, separated by horizon. Now there is no horizon, and these two regions can actually talk to each other, sending signals from the throat. Yes.
You probably mentioned this. So this metric that you're writing, it satisfies all the equations?
Well, I call it phenomenological metric.
Okay, so that's just...
It's just an example to show certain behavior, which I in principle expect, well, I expect it in complete, in full quantum gradient.
But it doesn't come from my understanding.
No, it doesn't. It's supposed...
Otherwise the curvature would be constant.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a solution of some unknown theory of gravity if you include all corrections, quantum corrections in the form of some non-local actions, whatever.
Does it still have two asymptotic regions, or what is the boundary
now? Boundary still is in two-dimensional torus. It is still asymptotic ideas.
It's a pair of them or just one?
Yes, there are two of them. But in classical case, you also have a pair of them, right?
Yes. But I mean, you're going to lose information to the other region.
I'm going to collect it.
Okay. Before, so you have a curvature in this row to scale like 1 over lambda squared.
Yeah.
If I change lambda to the fourth, for example, what will I guess my question is 1 over lambda squared, if I start thinking about other corrections and more, because, you know, you can't stop. Is 1 over lambda squared, I guess 1 over lambda squared would be the dominant.
Well, at the moment, lambda squared or lambda to the 4, it doesn't matter, because I didn't fix lambda as function of k. And at the moment, it's just a parameter which can be arbitrary.
Same
so some kind of consequences of this modification. And now, if you compute length or size of this instanton from one boundary to another in optical metric, it is now finite. And if lambda is small, it scales like log of lambda. Well, it's not important for me, but in principle, if you like, we can compute entropy of as Hopf was doing of thermal radiation, and it will be finite, it will be proportional to area scale as inverse of lambda. But now, if you look at the time, so there is time in the throat, which I call T throat, and T is time at infinity, and we are related for lambda. So 1 second on the throat would correspond to 1 over lambda seconds in the time on the boundary at infinity. And if lambda is, I don't know, small and like 10 to minus million or billion, that would be really a lot of time. It just shows that time flows for a distant observer, for observer at infinity, very slowly at the throat. And of course, it's practically frozen there. So all events which are happening in the throat would look extremely, extremely slow from the outside observer. And that's exactly the property which we know horizon has, but the main difference, we classify horizon, but main difference now is that this slow means not infinitely slow. If you wait long enough from the at infinity, you would notice that something is going on in the throat. Now, I want to identify, so it's natural to identify this length in optical metric, and that effective length which I introduced from the CFT side, and that fits the parameter lambda as function of k. So it should be exponential to minus k, and it's actually exponential to minus entropy of black hole. It's the class of black hole. I can compute a spectrum in this modified metric. Well, usual stuff, I can see the scalar field, the set of frequency omega, and after introducing new coordinate z, I end up with certain effective Schrödinger equation with potential u. So for class would be TZ black hole near horizon, horizon that case would be here. Potential u behaves like exponential, it's exponential decay near horizon. And it's clear that there is only continuous spectrum in this case. For modified metric, which I call BTCK, effective potential does like that. So it has to be minimum, and it's not exponential function, it's sinh squared. And there is small addition here, small constant proportion for lambda squared. And obviously, spectrum would be discrete in this case. And I can compute the spectrum in the limit of small lambda. And that's the result of this calculation. So there is m here, which scales as lambda, pm, which scales like 1 over log lambda. And if all this stuff, if this line of reasoning is correct, that would be our prediction for the spectrum of correlation function on the CFT side at finite k. So now, if you look at the spectrum, you would see that, well, there are different scales we can calculate Heisenberg that which introduced before by looking at spacing between two levels averaging, and that would behave like log of lambda, or it will grow as k, it's proportional to k. Well, there is another scale inverse to this effective mass m, which is 1 over lambda, lambda is e to minus s. So this time scale is exponential to entropy. And that is a good candidate for the Poincaré-Recurrence step. And it's much, much larger than for T Heisenberg. And if we look at correlation functions at really large, for a really large time, much larger than TH, I would see that for that, in that region, it's periodic with period set by M. So it has periodicity exactly this time, which we call, I call Poincaré-Recurrence time. It's exponential to K. So, now we could suggest the following scenario for restoring unitarity in black hole. So there are different time scales. There is a there is a scale set by size of this black hole, which is proportional to A. There is a Heisenberg time TH, and there is Poincaré-Recurrence time. And all these time scales are widely separated. If we have reasonably large black hole. Well, if k is reasonably large. But if you look at the system for t much smaller than Heisenberg time, you would say that it's actually spectrum looks continuous, and all non-unitary general dynamic behavior of semi-classical black hole would show up in this case, in this regime. So in this regime, BTZK would look exactly like BTZ. Well, at least if you look at the correlation functions. So when time goes approaches Heisenberg time, well, discreteness of the spectrum would show up in certain periodicities, and you would notice that there are certain periodicities and spectrum is not actually continuous. And it would look equidistant at this time scale. But if you look longer, and when time approaches Poincaré-Recurrence, then you'd see there are large scale correlations in the system. And it's probably at this time scale, all information which was restored in the system would be released. Well, that's basically end of my talk. And I have less transparency. And that's my conclusion. I cannot show you. That's pity. Okay, I will show you the whole stuff. I can show you the whole stuff. That's pity. When I was flying from Calgary to Toronto, I was reading Digital Fortress. The book. Lady next to me was reading the same book. Another guy in the same row was reading the same book. And I guess that 30% of passengers were reading the same book. And well, that's a book about coding, decoding the certain codes. And the first line is a quote for my conclusion. And there is a simple trick, apparently due to Julius Caesar. There are 25 letters here, 25 letters, that's perfect square. You just write the whole letters, I mean, like a square, what I have done here. And then message appears if you read from the up to the bottom. And that's what it says. Thank you.
Request to say that more.
So this BTZK, could you argue that that I don't think through the higher derivative correction to gravity, you know, you get towards such type of solution or
well, I can argue on.
I mean, how did you come up with this idea? Just to connect the two throats, but is it possible to also
well, I
see that quantum correction could be this?
I actually, historically, I came up for that metric 7 years ago, before all this stuff appeared with the DSFT. I was thinking about Hotthorst's calculation for brick wall model. And then I realized that you can effectively replace with the same purpose brick wall model with this fine metric, which is regular everywhere, doesn't have horizon. But Lambda effectively rolls, plays the role of this epsilon in the brick wall model. But at that time it was just one metric for one purpose. But now we can use it at least for two purposes. Because it shows natural behavior which we would expect black hole if unitarity is really preserved in the system for black hole. It shows very natural behavior how it actually preserves.
But can it be argued to solve gravity plus some incredible
well, correct? Hopefully yes, but I don't know.
I don't think you can because you already know that including your metric has an infinitely large curvature in the limit lambda goes to zero.
Yes.
So you cannot consistently say let's add r to the fourth term to the computation. We'll find out that you need the whole slew of those higher derivative corrections.
Exactly.
You cannot control. So I don't think that you can make an argument just from the GR. Like, you know, you need to know in other words all alpha prime corrections, not the first alpha prime correction.
Yes, we have to know the whole story.
Yeah,
the whole
so it's not
quantum
I'm not sure how. Again, I'm a little bit skeptical about your final conclusion because, in a sense, you come to this conclusion by removing the essence. What was the problem of you know not having quasi periodic relations? That's horizon, right? So you remove that by making this net. So it's.
Yes, but I end up with something which would look exactly like semi-classical black hole for most of the time. That's the usual resolution of unitarity. I mean, information is lost everywhere, every time around us. That's just because we don't live long enough, theoretically speaking.
Just to be devil's advocate, I mean, there are other proposals for resolution of the horizon, right? For example, the horizon could be, you know, some coherent superposition of John Blake, basically mass of Sabine, right? So that we don't have a horizon, but in particular, specifically for the D1, D5 system, he argues that actually the horizon is replaced by, you know, it's just geometries of different topology and things like that. So in that case, I don't think that there will be, if you were to compute correlation functions there, maybe you won't have that problem.
Well,
the problem is that that's extreme of the one that I'm talking. Yes.
Well, I'm not saying that that's the solution to the problem. It's a solution.
If the conformal field theory has a continuous spectrum of conformal dimensions,
say it again.
If the conformal field theory had a continuous spectrum of conformal dimensions, you wouldn't get this sort of intermediate time scale from the Heisenberg.
You mean if delta is continuous?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly have that, just imagine a conformal field theory with the real scalar field.
But it's done for fixed conformal wave. I excite perturbation with certain conformal wave. Okay. I don't care if it's
as
only one level. Okay.
Maybe philosophical question. When you consider, so there is no problem in infinite volume, right? If you have a system and you actually can take thermodynamic limits, there is no problem with this planetary behavior, it doesn't exist, just goes away, right? So when you talk about thermal Green's function, what exactly, what is the ensemble issue, and what is the temperature? And because in subgraditity you have to balance this infinite volume limit, right, and the time limit, right, and if you have a fine volume, then
in order to have thermal equilibrium, we need thermodynamic equilibrium, which means infinite volume. That's right.
Or you have some restriction on the time scale.
Yes. Or we should look at the system not long enough.
Yeah.
For some interval of time, it would look exactly like kernel.
Yeah.
That's the best guess. So, in a sense, black hole is exactly in the same pattern. If you look for a fixed amount of time, it would look like kernel system. But if you look long enough, you would find out that there are long-time correlations. It's actually something unitary showing
But you still apply the formalism of equilibrium
thermodynamics
beyond.
Yes, but less usual way to do it. Even in statistical mechanics, statistical physics.
I'm not so sure.
But what you can do?
But if you go beyond equilibrium, then we should go beyond equilibrium
and have some formalism for non-equilibrium system. That's probably doable.
Which strictly speaking doesn't exist.
Yeah. That's what we can do, yes.
Two questions, really. The first, on the formal field theory side, did I understand that you're just guessing what it shows? You don't know what the actual recurrence time is for the conformal field theory.
So because there is no population on the CT side.
Okay. And the second question is, I think it's related to some of the questions that were being raised, like Alex was raising. I'm a bit confused by the physical framework for this discussion, because if you believe in the restoration of unitarity, I don't myself, but if you believe in it, then it has something to do with the evaporation of the black hole. And your time scales are exponentially longer than that time scale. So what physical, why would you hope, but you're working in a fixed black hole background, so why would you hope to see the unitarity restoration? What kind of mechanism do you have in mind that would produce that unitarity for sort of test fields propagating on a black hole background?
Well,
this would not be involving the essential quantum gravitational effect that you would normally think would be needed to restore unitarity.
Well, that's exactly the reason why I consider a total black hole. It doesn't have a parade in classical, it exists infinite amount of time.
But still, it has to be some gravitational. Oh, I see, which is. So that's. And you're hoping that the instant times are not with the gravitational.
Well, in particular, yes.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
No.
Because, well, what I'm going to ask is related to your first question, indirectly related to this, and because I'm a little bit, I mean, I don't quite understand some of the comments that you were making, but isn't it, so normally it's exact, so if we have a black hole, it evaporates. Now, usually the black holes, when we consider in ABS-UT, we say that they are in equilibrium with their radiation. So in the sense, in what sense do we think about them? Should we think of them as a closed system or as a, more like related to you?
It is a closed system.
Well,
what is outside?
I guess, should I say there is a Hawking radiation? Well, I mean, the black hole should be in equilibrium with its own Hawking radiation, so that it doesn't evaporate. So is that Hawking radiation? We never know when we discuss black holes in the ABS.
Well, there should be, your answer to the Hartle Hawking state where radiation is both entering and leaving the horizon.
What?
You're in the Hartle, some sort of Hartle Hawking state.
and the radiation enters and leaves the horizon. There's still a thermal vent for the supergravity nodes outside of the horizon.
But there's, the thing is that there's still, I think it's the same thing that's bothering many people, is that there's still, if you take the hair production picture of how the radiation is formed, then you have these pairs. One of them ends up going into the black hole, and one of them ends up going out and appearing as Hawking radiation. Now, I don't know, for a massive field, maybe they both end up ultimately inside the black hole. But at least for a massive field, presumably one of them propagates out to infinity, and one of them ends up inside. And there's a that sets up a correlation between the internal. I mean, the answer to your question, what's outside the system, is what's outside the system is what's inside the black hole. That's not part of the system.
You also
that you're looking at.
You also have other conditions that you put it, so I'm not sure.
You set up a correlation between those two photons of, let's say, gravitons of the pair. And once you do that, if you trace out over the states of the internal system, you inevitably get a mixed state for the external system. The only way you can ever overcome that would be to somehow bring that inside thing back up so that it represents, that the correlation that you have represents correlation between two things outside the
black hole.
So,
yes, but experiment is like we have a black hole and we drop, say, particle or whatever inside black hole and look at, well, or make a perturbation somehow which goes inside black hole synclassically. And then we look at correlation function outside black hole at later time with the previous initial state. And that correlation is exponentially decaying. And that's, for eternal black hole, is manifestation of loss of information.
Yeah, I think what you've done, I mean, I think you explained things too clearly, in a sense, because what you did was the analog of this brick wall. You put some sort of, something like a boundary condition. So you just, by hand, made it possible for the information to come back out somehow.
You mean modifying metric?
Yeah, by this modifying.
Yes, in a sense, yes, it goes through the throat, goes through another boundary, and it comes back.
The dissipated boundary condition, that's why he can that's why I'm saying it's not clear whether it's a solution to the problem.
Yeah, I'm just echoing your comment.
Yeah,
but unless there is a good physical reason to lead to that solution.
If you have a physical reason why, so you are saying there is another time scale, which in the limit of infinitely large central charge goes to infinity. Is there some other indication for this? What are the physical indications for the presence of this time scale? Is there, if it's infinitely large, can I see some physical,
it is an assumption, of course. It is an assumption. And we built another assumption on that assumption. But it's a fact that ADS UFT respondents give us a function which exponentially decaying.
It's a presence of the horizon. It's a generic feature of the horizon, nothing to do with it.
Yes, but on the CFT, it should be unitary. CFT should be unitary. So if there is a correspondence, why CFT on the boundary, which is unitary, shows exponential decay? Do you have another solution?
There was another proposal, and that's infinite number of degrees of freedom, which is, in a sense, I think is related to exactly what you were saying, you see this dissipation because you have infinite number of degrees of freedom, and that's the only thing that you do in AGS space. I guess what you're doing is suggesting a model for a finite number of degrees of freedom of AGS.
I suggest, yes.
Maybe this is a good question to jump in and ask us to thank Sergey one more time, and we can pick up the conversation with us. Thank you.
American Arab states is really still around.
I was good question.